Time for another edition of Garden Talk, and today we'll be zeroing in on vegetables with our two guests, the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture and Gardening Haiku Poet. Jim, welcome.
Wow, what a great introduction. Thank you, Larry.
I choked almost, but...
I know. I mean, just introducing me chokes you up, Larry. I appreciate that. I don't know if it's out of fright or out of glee.
Let's see, Irwin Goldman.
He might be on the...
Goldman.
He's in Chicago.
Is he here?
He's going to call in, I think.
I was having a fabulous Thanksgiving.
Oh,
there he is.
But it's nice to hear both of you.
Well, it's great to hear your voice. So you had a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner, I assume.
My aunt is a gourmet chef, and we have a very elaborate Thanksgiving with a lot of vegetables that hopefully in the next hour and a half we'll get to talk about.
How about a theme today, Irwin? I suggested this to Larry. What about we ask our audience, in addition to their, probing questions, what about we talk about unusual vegetables that we consumed at our Thanksgiving dinner?
I think that's perfect.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Well,
I'll give you an example.
All right, give us one.
I was in a conversation with one of my cousins yesterday at Thanksgiving about the vegetable called salsify. And salsify is, sometimes called the oyster, the vegetable oyster. It's in the Asteraceae. It's a fascinating root vegetable. And one of my other cousins walked by and he said, I'm so glad you're having this conversation because all these years I've been using the word salsify as a verb. So, there's a lot to learn about some of these.
Well, I tell you what. Let me turn to Jim before we take a call. We've got Dick in Lakeville, Illinois up first here, but... with a question, I think, relating to peppers. But did you have anything unusual for?
Well, really. I was so moved by this that I actually spontaneously have written a spontaneous haiku. Let's see if I can get this. I've got to get the 575 thing down again, as always. But I think it starts off with, how about this? Fragrant yellow mush, the rare rutabaga root. Why only once a year?
Oh, that word. Why only once?
Larry, stop, don't start counting with your fingers like that. It's so irritating.
Rutabaga. Did you have rutabaga yesterday?
Indeed. It's one of my sister-in-law's favorites. She always makes the fabulous rutabaga, and I saw it. It was on sale. I mean, there was a sale quantity of this over at Woodman's that was just beyond belief. I would
now
say
the rutabaga is brassica. Is it brassica napus, Jim?
Yep, it's a napus.
Brassica napus and fabulous storage vegetable, right?
The storage vegetable is really what it's all about, and that's why one of the things that Irwin and I are proposing is that we change some of the building regulations here in the state of Wisconsin to require that all buildings have a root cellar. I don't understand. I mean, don't they have places to put your air conditioner and you've got to have walls so thick? But where's the root cellar? I don't know what's happened to that.
Well, I will say Extension, University of Wisconsin Extension, and maybe Cooperative Extension, has a wonderful publication on how to build a root cellar in your home.
Can they do it in the – if they could do that in the form of a haiku?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that artistic, but it is rather factual. And for those listeners who have an interest in that, I think it's something you may want to look at.
We used to do this. I'm an old farm boy, right? And we used to have our root cellar on the farm, and we would store carrots and even tomatoes, but all root vegetables would be stored, well into Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, sure. We did too. Dick in Lakeville, Illinois has a question for us. So let's go to Dick. Dick, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Okay, and they have no exotic vegetables.
Dick, what about that haiku?
But I've never heard of that one.
But you've got a question about peppers.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a pepper plant, three of them actually, that I started from seed, and they didn't get big enough. Apparently, I don't have enough sun or something. One of them is about 6 inches tall, another one's about 8, 10 inches tall. And then I've got the big one that I dug out of the ground that I kept over the winter last year. And with the
so these are you just planted these, Dick? You are a man of faith, Dick, because planting in November, you know, your peppers is, I think, an act of faith.
No, I didn't plant them. Oh. These are ones that I planted in the spring.
Oh.
And well, they now only got one of them 6 inches tall, another one's 8 inches. I mean, they just didn't really grow much.
Okay.
So now you want to grow them
in the basement under some grow lights. They have two fluorescent tubes down there. And the questions I have, how do you keep the darn things going? Like the one that's about, that was from last year, is about 3 feet tall. I can just barely get under the light.
So you got them 6 inches to 3 feet tall.
And it has peppers on it.
Okay.
And I've been feeding it with Miracle-Gro. And keep, of course, it's right up against the lights, that one. The other ones I've had in the window. But what is the process for keeping them going all winter?
You know, listen, here's the thing, Dick. Really, the peppers are, if you go to Central or South America, peppers there are perennials. And so you can certainly keep them going for forever. I would say cut it back, put it as close to, I mean, I would take the one that's what is it, 3 foot tall? I would cut it back so that it matches the other one 6 inches tall. And I would
just take off the pepper.
I would just take off everything from it. I would restrain myself from the Miracle-Gro. I would give them only water, light, and love. Oh. And in that order.
Well, the big one last year they had in the winter, it almost looked like it died back, and I had practically given up on it.
Oh no! I threw it back
in the ground, and it finally took off.
Sure, yeah, they'll. You can do this. You can maintain them. They will. You'll be able to preserve them. So it must be a pepper that you really love, Dick. We've got to know the story as to why you have this passion for maintaining this particular pepper plant. There's got to be a story behind it. If there's not a haiku behind it, Dick, I know there's a story here.
Well, it's one that I started from seed, I suppose.
Okay.
So it wasn't like a gift from the significant other.
Oh, no.
There's not a romantic twist to this. Seed. Is there any?
Probably one of the 10 for $10 ones.
Okay. Dick, we're just not going down the road that I'd like to go down here.
Thanks, Nick, for calling. You can do it. Keep at it. Appreciate it. Betsy in River Falls, on to you. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. I have a haiku, and Larry, get your fingers ready.
All right.
Here we go. Fall into winter.
Fall into winter.
Wait to spring into summer.
Wait to spring into summer.
Let's eat vegetables.
Oh, that works.
Doesn't it?
Oh, look at that. He's using those finger things again with his haiku. That, Larry, that is so irritating. Clearly, Betsy had this. She nailed it.
It's all my damn fault, so blame me. Have a wonderful day. You guys are my absolute favorites, and you make me smile beyond words. Thanks.
Where is Irwin? I miss him. I'm here.
I'm here, Jim. I think she got the 575 on that.
Don't you think mine was too? Did you?
I think you're a little more freeform, which is part of your charm. You know, honestly,
but, you know, that is me in a nutshell, isn't it, Irwin?
Yeah, it's
like other people count to five. Remember that faculty meeting when they wanted everything to go? you were the only one who laughed. Everyone said we have to do this in alphabetical order. I said no. I said,
right.
As chairman, you get to determine the order of the letters in the alphabet.
That's right. There's a certain amount of discretion that comes with that job.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's how
and,
I feel
and
about
I think
it.
You have that same thing when it comes to the syllables in the haiku poetry.
In the English language or in Spanish as well. You'd be surprised how people are frightened by me speaking Spanish.
You read a really good one in Spanish out of a book one
Oh,
time.
Yes. Irwin and I actually read
Ode to the Tomato.
That's right. We read a Neruda poem, and he wrote the Ode to the Tomato, and it was all about plunging the visceral knife into the red flesh of the tomato and oozing masses on the...
It was quite good.
Yeah, I always thought of it as a romantic.
Well, listen, Kate in New Berlin has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Back to vegetables.
Kate, hello. Kate, are you there?
I wanted to talk about the potato, which is not an exotic vegetable, but we had lots of family stories. Where my grandparents lived was Alberta, and it was heavy potato growing country. And when we would go out to the lake, Grandma would take us out to a farmer's field, and she would tell us to go get potatoes, which we were stealing. And she would tell us she was going to be lookout. And we knew darn well from probably about the age of 10 that if anybody showed up, Grandma would be gone. But that was our potatoes. And the other thing was Grandpa always had a potato patch in the backyard, and it used to be a thing. He'd go out with whichever grandkid was there in his potato fork, and we would pull out the little teeny ones.
Oh.
And the other thing about potatoes was there was this recipe that's now been Mother's Little Potato Things for 4 generations I know of, involved being, and it's always Christmas and Thanksgiving, where we make, essentially you make a mashed potato with lots of cheese and an egg and a cream in it, and then you make pastry and you spread it out like a jelly roll and slice it and bake it.
Oh, I saw that recipe, the cardiac spud. Yeah.
Hmm?
I saw that recipe, but the potato with cheese and sour cream and butter and, yeah.
Yeah, it's been Mother's Little Potato Thing for. We think there's probably a fancy French name for it, but we don't know what it
is. Did you see that at the cardiologist, Jim? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I read that. I was at the cardiologist just the other day, and I saw that same recipe.
Yeah,
actually, it was
like
right
it.
There.
Sounds
and,
good to me.
And it just, I think it does have an unusual French name.
But
Larry is
Le potato.
I can see fright. I can see fear come across Larry's face as he imagines me thinking of the without you actually personally here to restrain me.
Well, Kate, so
those are potato stories.
I love the potato. And Irwin, what's your opinion of the potato?
You mean in terms of its rank in the vegetable universe?
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan, Larry, of the potato, and in fact, in the last month or so, there has been an upswell of interest worldwide in the potato as a major source of calories for the poor in this world, partly because of the scarcity and the high prices of grains. So, you know, some of the listeners may be aware of the sort of, this is the year of the potato, 2008, and internationally, it is becoming a heralded vegetable around the world as a vegetable to sustain lives. And so it just has so much going for it.
And it can be grown in pretty much a variety of conditions, can it?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, of course, it comes from the Andes, and it's native to the high Andes, I think, although it's dispersed all throughout Central and South America. But it can be grown everywhere. And it's an incredible source of calories. It's an amazingly productive plant. And, of course, then it can be stored. So it has a lot going for it.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's you know, if you think about U.S. consumption, I think the potato is the most consumed vegetable in the United States. Isn't that right, Jim?
But, you know, Aaron, that doesn't that break your heart in some ways?
If you think only about French fries, it does.
This is frightening. I mean, and really, I mean, and what about the sweet potato? I mean,
yeah.
The convolvia lacy.
We had a sweet potato dish yesterday.
Tell us about it, Larry.
Oh, it was lovely.
Little nuts. What did you add? Was it just plain?
I didn't do any. No, it wasn't just plain. There was some probably some brown sugar and some nuts of some sort in it, and it was just delicious.
But
I didn't make it, so I have no idea.
I don't think it tasted
really good.
All you have to do is heat up a sweet potato, and you can add.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you can add anything,
a little butter,
and it's going to be a magnificent meal. Now, I'll admit that the potato, Irwin, as you describe it, this is a vegetable for the huddled masses. Irwin, there are not a lot of gourmet recipes associated with the potato. I mean, you boil it, you fry it. I mean, heavens.
Well, you make...
Have I missed out on something in life here?
Well, you know, I have to say that. So my wife makes these roasted root vegetables, and when you add potato in there, when you roast it, you get the Maillard reaction and the products of the Maillard reaction. Then there's nothing quite like an oven-roasted potato. You know, that's been seared on the outside. Isn't that a lovely thing?
I'll admit that it is a wonderful thing, and it is. And there is this magic about opening up that russeted brown exterior and revealing this magnificent white fluffiness of you know, of gelatinized starch.
That's the thing.
But after all, it is gelatinized starch.
Our guest today, Jim Nanus and Irwin Goldman, Vicars of Vegetables, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking vegetables today on this edition of Garden Talk, growing them, eating them, cooking them, and our two guests, Jim Nanus, professor of horticulture at UW-Madison, Irwin Goldman, professor of horticulture and associate dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, our guests today. If you have a haiku, a vegetable haiku, or a question, or an experience to share, maybe you've got an unusual vegetable that you had for dinner yesterday for Thanksgiving, we'd love to hear from you. 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And I'm not sure if I want to get the name pronounced right. Elon, is it Elon?
Yes, Elon.
Elon in Milwaukee.
I-L-O-N-A, Milwaukee.
All right. Thank you for calling. Oh. What's on your mind?
Elon.
Sorrow. There are two parts. Two parts. One is a question.
Okay.
I have a potted sorrel. Now, sorrel is a perennial, but I don't have any place to put it, otherwise to put it in soil. So I have a pot. And I don't know, what do you think about trying to overwinter it? Right now it's just straggly and pale.
Oh, so you're using it, are you using it as a leaf vegetable or as a root vegetable?
Leaf.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, that's the second part. I think it should be much, much more used. It's like spinach, but it is much more flavorful. You can make soup of it. You can use it in excellent soup.
Oh, tell us about how you actually use it. I mean, you eat it as a now. Irwin just indicated that this was the year of the potato.
Mm. Ah,
but I think that next year, I think there's a possibility.
Make it a soto.
I think we can talk to Barack. I think he's open to the opportunity to either make 2009 the year of sorrel. Certainly, he made. He's really into unusual vegetables. Wasn't his favorite arugula? Actually, now tell us how you prepare sorrel.
Okay, there are two ways. Just simply snip it off, eat it green, put it in salad, and as for preparing, you can make excellent soup of it. You can put it in broth, in bouillon, and you can treat it actually as you treat spinach. Only it is much more flavorful.
And it has the huge advantage.
Kind of yucky blend.
The huge advantage is that spinach is a wonderful vegetable, but it is, you know, because of its photoperiod sensitivity, it's difficult to grow here because if you go into long days, it bolts. Whereas things like sorrel and arugula are not going to bolt, so you can grow them year round.
Well, that is it, and I think it can be done. I think it really can be done.
Wow.
You can make it like a vegetable puree and. You can, crumble egg yolk over it and fried bacon over it. I mean, really, use your imagination, but it's a very versatile one. Now, the only thing
Can I make a comment about sorrel? I don't know how many people are familiar with it, but it has a very sharp taste, and that sharp taste is very similar to spinach in that it's oxalic acid. It contains oxalic acid.
It is an oxalis a genus.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's family Polygonaceae, and it has that oxalic acid is that it gives a kind of abrasive quality to it, you know, and that's very similar to what you get with Swiss chard, with beet leaves, and of course with spinach.
Isn't that closer related? Oh my God, heaven! Isn't it related to what is that weed we used to have on the farm so many years ago?
Well, there is wild. I don't know if it grows wild in the United States. In Northern Europe, it does. In the meadows. There's a meadow sorrel.
I think you could probably grow. You know, the reason it's probably looking pretty peaked now is because it's not getting enough light, my guess.
Should I try to keep it? Should I try to stick it in, cut it back and stick it in the basement?
Absolutely. But in the basement with lights and restrain yourself from the 2020 miracle grow, I would say. Give it a little water. Just look at it longingly, I think, over the entire winter, and it will survive.
Yeah, well, one other note, you know, maybe...
Where do you get seeds of this?
Some of the previous ones, if you'll give me another minute.
Okay.
Do you keep your own seeds, or do you...
No, I just bought it, and as a matter of fact, I bought it, I think, at Hawks here in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Oh. One of the large outlying... I was very surprised to see it there. And so I jumped at it.
Well, I think you should be able to keep it over.
I'll do that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Ilan. And Mike in Abrams is up next. Mike, hello to you.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Jim. Hello, Irwin. How's it going?
Terrific.
Good to hear.
Oh, boy.
I'm a student in your horticulture 370 class right now.
Ah, how wonderful.
Oh, it's one of those angry student calls again, Irwin. You know how they are.
It's kind of like that. You know, I was feeling emboldened with some of the information I gleaned from class and went home feeling pretty smart about my vegetable knowledge.
Didn't we? You know, we encouraged all the students, of course, to go home and to be polite snobs during their Thanksgiving dinner, and to just flow forth with information about the vegetables that they're eating, because that is, I don't know about your experience, Irwin, but I find that especially for those relatives that you have little tolerance for, this is so irritating to them. Maybe you don't have that experience.
Well,
what about Mike?
Mike, what about you? What have you got?
Well, I was it was during the pre-meal snack time, I guess, and we had the pickle tray was out.
Ooh, okay. The pickle tray.
And we had pickled cucumbers of all varieties, the fresh pack and the green stock and the Russian dills and the refrigerator dills, you know. There was also some pickled asparagus, pickled green beans. But then I was feeling pretty confident when we came to the pickled cauliflower, which I'm not very fond of myself. I think pickling kind of ruins it. But the pickled cauliflower had turned purple. And with the knowledge we'd picked up in lab a couple weeks ago, I thought, that must be because of the anthocyanins in cauliflower that are otherwise repressed when not in an acidic solution. And everyone scoffed at me and pretty much ignored me.
Is he right, Irwin?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh,
the pickling changes the pH, right?
Huh? Yeah, just like hydrangeas, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And did it turn... Did the whole white part of the vegetable turn purple?
The whole vegetable, purple.
Fantastic.
You know, the beautiful thing about this is that you can, of course, I love to entertain my family with, with parlor tricks with vegetables. This is the pre-meal entertainment, is the parlor tricks that we do with vegetables, of course. And so you could have thought, Mike, of the opportunity to actually change the pH back to basic. You know, like take the ashes out of Uncle Willie's pipe, for example. You know, just sort of shake those quietly into the pickled cauliflower dish and then change the color back and forth, right? Oh, that would be kind of an amazing thing.
I'll keep that in mind for next year.
Yeah, well,
Mike, can I ask you what else was in the what else was being pickled with it?
I'm pretty sure it was just vinegar in the cauliflower.
Okay,
it was pretty basic stuff.
Okay.
So I don't think there's any contributing factors other than the acidity.
So what was your most unusual vegetable, Mike, at the Thanksgiving meal?
Sure. Well, I think
that one might have been it.
that might have been it,
but I really enjoyed the baked onions made with maple syrup and butter and things like that. That was really good.
Irwin, I can just envision him salivating at this very moment.
That is fabulous. Jim, can we give Mike some extra credit points?
I think that, no problem about that. You know, we are looking forward, you know, Monday, Irwin, we get our term papers in. You know, the best term papers, really, you know, you'd think that they would have glorious titles like, you know, the production and maintenance of sorrel. But in fact, the best term papers are almost always begin with the title, Jim, / you are so wrong about. Haven't we gotten an increasing number of those term papers over the last few years?
Yeah, and in fact, it seems like we get a lot of those papers, Jim.
You know,
are the best. Those are the most passionate. You know, the students really can, they've had it. They've had it a whole semester.
I don't understand what this comes from. I mean, we are trained to not express, I mean, we exhort them that we present only data. We never express an opinion in our class.
Just the facts.
Mike,
just
is that facts. True? Is that true, Mike?
That it's the truth and nothing but the whole truth. I don't know.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Michael. 5 points.
Nancy and Ashlyn, on to you. Hi, Nancy.
Delightful. These two fellows should come on when you're you have a more serious subjects, because I'll bet they could make fun of them too.
Just the facts were just the facts here.
I had to call because I was raised on a potato farm up near Lake Superior, mm-hmm. and I, you know, potatoes are not in the vegetable group when you're meal planning. They are a group all of their own. You know, you plan the meat, and then the potatoes, and then vegetables, which are totally separate from potatoes.
So do you think, is that because of their starch content, you think of them separately as a starch, right?
No, we thought of them as very good. And if you saw my family by the time we all reached 50, you could be sure that starch just was a given, you know. It was, but when I learned meal planning at my grandma and my mother's knees, and it was always meat. What are we going to have for potatoes? Vegetables, salad, and dessert. And they also made candy out of potatoes.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What is that? That's really interesting.
It looks almost like a peppermint candy, and we
was this made out of the actual now how
potato
was
right out
yeah,
of the potato?
Mashed potatoes.
Mashed
yeah.
potatoes.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. And sugar, and you know, it was as bad as any other candy for for calories. But then my mother would decorate them in pastel colors. Oh. And they were really
oh,
good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
I
and
like
then
that.
We used potatoes and bread, potato pancakes, potato salad. We just and then we even used potatoes for decorating. There were always some odd shaped potatoes.
And weapons. They can be used as weapons as well.
Yes. Well, my grandsons have these potato guns, but we haven't. That was way before our time, but. Anybody that wanted to could bring in an odd-shaped potato, and they would last most of the winter sitting around, and some of them were kind of risque, you know. They reminded you of the Statue of David and so on, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I would never lower myself to that level.
You
actually.
Would And at my wedding shower, I got a nightie made from two burlap potato sacks. So our family was inundated with this. Well, then
I love the romance associated with the potato here.
So anyway, my family then moved from a farm in Iron County, Wisconsin, to Alabama. And my mother and grandmother had an awful time converting people there from rice, but they succeeded finally.
Or from sweet potatoes.
Yeah. So anyway, you guys keep it up. This is always such an enjoyable day.
All right. Thanks, Nancy. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, one of my favorites is the jicama.
Ooh.
And Becky in Rio, I think, has something about jicamas.
I do. Hi, everybody.
Cool.
Hi. I'm an extension nutrition educator, and I've been doing a class with some families. The kids and moms are there together, and each week we're trying to do something different with fruits and vegetables. And I thought, you know, I think we all know what a raw carrot and dip tastes like. We got to go beyond carrots. So last week we had raw jicama, and let me tell you what we had. We're going to call my haiku is Family Cooking Class. Jicama, sweet potatoes.
Now, is that the first line or is that the list?
All right.
Family cooking class. Jicama, sweet potatoes, red pepper, and dip.
And
they love the raw jicama with dip. They weren't so crazy about the raw sweet potatoes and the sweet red peppers they loved. So we really had fun, and everybody said they'd never had jicama before. They really liked it.
You know, jicama reminds me a lot of fresh garden peas.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you say that, Larry, because they are in the same family as peas.
Really?
Oh, they are.
It's a legume.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm. Yeah, it's so surprising. In fact, the one of the common names for jicama is yam bean.
Oh.
And it's actually a legume.
Okay. It has more juicy quality than...
They sure do. They sure do, but I bet.
I think when people say Mexican potatoes, because it's not really like a potato at all.
Not at all. That's right. It's real crisp, and it has a sweetness to it. My mom actually used to buy these. You know, I remember them from when I was a kid. They were quite exotic at the time, and I've since learned that the sweetness in the jicama is due to fructose. It has these fructose polymers, sometimes called inulin, that are a really excellent sugar because you can't really digest it, so you perceive it as sweet. And I think the jicama is often sweet, especially if you get a good one, but it doesn't really contribute calorically because you don't digest that particular sugar.
So how do you know how to get a good one?
That's a great question. Jim has spent time in Central America, and I think he's even been on a farm where they grow them. Maybe Jim will have an answer to that.
You know, I remember the jicama brings back a lot of memories for me too, because when I was in the Peace Corps in Central America, I remember going down there, and I was just as surprised as you were. You know, they had these giant plants. I mean, these giant, you know, earth-devouring plants. I mean, they were beyond belief. And I thought, what? There are no beans on them. And they kept referring to them as beans, right? And I thought, what are they doing? And then they went down to the soil and they ripped up this giant tuber. And then they started eating it. And I just sat there in awe. I could not believe. And then now I see them at, you know, like Woodman's. You know, heavens, they're everywhere. Now, I would say that probably the best ones are going to be actually probably imported. Although, you know, I am always proven wrong. It's one of the joys of my life. In that, I would say that, you know, I think I've said that it's probably impossible to grow a jicama in Wisconsin. And yet, what did I see just last summer? I saw jicamas that were grown here in Wisconsin. They were grown under plastic. So you can grow them here, although they're not going to get very large. In Central America, even there, they take about 15, you know, 18 months to grow. But they can get enormous in size. You know what I really love about the jicama, in addition to the, you know, to the fructans, is the crispness. It's the texture of the jicama.
Yeah.
I think for a salad, they're just spectacular.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about doing with one.
You know, the most
shredded jicama and mandarin oranges.
Arugula, cardoon, salsify, and sorrel.
All right. You know, maybe I'll go for two or three.
Listen,
I have to mention one thing about the jicama that I know you didn't ask about, but that is fascinating, and that is that the plant is quite poisonous. The root is very edible, but the plant is poisonous, and the seeds are the source of rotenone, which is a fish killing chemical.
Yeah.
So. So it's interesting that the plant itself would be a pretty toxic thing to eat, but the root, of course, is fabulous.
So does it blossom on top like a potato plant while the tuber is growing down below?
It produces a pod like a bean. In fact, the pods look very much like a snap bean or a green bean.
But you sure don't eat those then.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
You cannot eat those. That's right.
Thanks for calling, Becky. Appreciate it. Oh, jicama. I love jicama. Frank in Marshfield, your turn. Hi, Frank.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello, what's on your mind?
Well, this morning I stopped at the grocery store, and I seen some yams, sweet potatoes. So I bought some. The last time I seen sweet potatoes was in Okinawa. When we finally ended up in Okinawa, we bivouacked in the area, and there was a field there with sweet potatoes. We dug them up, some of them, and cooked them in a helmet. And that's the last time I seen sweet potatoes until today.
You know what, Frank? I bet there's a little confusion in the audience, because I think what you're actually telling us is that you saw yams in Okinawa. Very likely you did not see, you know, because the
sweet potato. What's the difference between a sweet potato and a yam?
Well, there's a completely different families, actually. The sweet potato is actually a true root, right? And the yam is an African vegetable. And it is Dioscorea, and it is actually a true tuber. Now, they look, you know, somewhat similar, and in fact, you see in the grocery stores, you see, you know, Prinsella canned yams, and in fact, they're not yams, they're sweet potatoes if they're produced. You only see Dioscorea, you only see yams I don't think they're grown in the 50 United States at all. The only place that I have ever seen them grown in the extended United States is Puerto Rico.
Oh.
And they're grown to some extent in Central America, although the sweet potato is more popular there. But I bet what Frank is talking about is, I bet in Okinawa, I bet he saw true yams.
That's correct. In the Philippines and in Japan and in Vietnam, they grow Dioscorea there, and those are real yams.
As Jim says, absolutely correct. And that's Dioscorea, completely different sort of, you know, more of an African type of a vegetable. Very, very starchy.
Now, you could have written a haiku. I think Frank could have written a haiku in that helmet after he had cooked the yams. I think, Frank, do you still have the helmet there? Did you write the haiku in there about the delicious yam that you were eating? Any possibility of that?
We lost him. Oh, well.
Sometimes when you get to the haiku portion, they drop the phone.
They drop the phone. Well, so all these years, Frank was thinking he had eaten sweet potatoes.
He referred to both of them, but he very likely, I would guess, that he was eating actually the true yam.
Well, thank you very much, Frank, for that call. I appreciate it. Well, we're learning a lot here today. Thomas in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi, I've got another potato question. I was wondering, a friend of mine was watching a television program where they were growing potatoes in a garbage can, and as the potato grew, they would add more soil. And in the article, it said that you could grow up to 50 pounds of potatoes in one garbage can. Have you ever tried that, or do you know of anybody who has? Any tricks at all?
Erwin?
I don't know. I'm sure we have a listener out there who's tried it, but it would not surprise me at all to grow 50 pounds of potatoes in a volume that size, because the tubers, of course, are all, you know, they all form underground. They don't need to be supported aerially, and it's very common for plants to be incredibly productive. So that wouldn't surprise me at all. What do you think, Jim?
Well, but yeah. You know, watering it is going to be kind of a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be an issue. You're going to have to. I mean, it's a lot of work.
You're going to have some holes in the bottom of the can.
I mean, I would say, it's so much easier just to grow it outdoors in the. Just shovel up a little soil. I mean, this garbage can thing.
Well, let's say if you're living in an apartment, couldn't you put a trash can out on the?
Absolutely.
That's right. You could call them ornamentals, actually.
And, that's right.
And probably just intrigue the entire neighborhood with the possibility. And then when you went to harvest, think of that, especially if you lived on an upper floor, right? And you'd be throwing out dirt, right? Falling down on everyone else and the floors below as you were cleaning your potato harvest. I don't know. There's something lyrical about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, any kind of container gardening, I think, would work. And, of course, as Larry and Jim both said, I think you would need something at the bottom to make sure there was drainage. But other than that, it seems like a perfectly good vessel to do it in.
So you'd start with a small amount of dirt or some dirt in the bottom, maybe a third, and then you, as the plant grows, you just put more dirt in?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Absolutely.
If you need any more garbage cans, if you wait till a windy day, drive around the neighborhood, you should be able to get a whole truckload.
Oh, this is a man. This is a man who thinks a lot like me.
Thanks, Tom. Our guests today, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman, are vicars of vegetables from the University of Wisconsin Department of Horticulture, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking growing and preparing and eating vegetables, potatoes, I almost said, because we've dealt a lot with potatoes, but a lot of other vegetables as well with our two guests, our vicars of vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman. We have before we get to Barb here in Gaze Mills, I want to let you know that we have an email from Vinny in Appleton, and he says a most delicious, underrated, and sensuous vegetable is the Brussels sprout, and he says he's got a recipe. It says you steam it with butter, but is one way to do it. But you can also cut them in half and stir fry in olive oil, scallions, and garlic. The natural sugars come out, and they're wonderful. Broiled is great too. Brushed with evo or butter, they also keep extremely well. And I am a Brussels sprouts fan. My wife is not, which is really too bad. Erwin, are you a Brussels sprouts guy?
Oh, absolutely. It's a fabulous vegetable. And I think, isn't it traditional, Larry, that is it in England and the UK that this is the time of year when people really consume them? Because, of course, this is when they get really tasty. They get sour. There's a cold sweetening that occurs with them right around this time of year. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think so. Otherwise, they can be bitter if they're picked too early.
Yeah. So, I mean, between Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving and the end of the year, that's a time when I think people people choose them.
In fact, I think, you know, many people really like to have a frost before you'll consume a Brussels sprout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Vinny's right. I'll
well,
say
Vinny,
that.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Like, what? I'm intrigued. I wish Vinny would have called up, though, because, you know, that suggests sort of a cultural heritage there, Vinny. So I was expecting more of an Italian kind of a meal.
Well, he had the...
Oh, he was stir-frying it in olive oil. Okay,
olive
okay.
oil with and, garlic and scallions.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe...
Let's face it, Brussels sprouts, don't you think they were domesticated in the Mediterranean? I mean, you know, Rome yeah. and places
sure.
like that.
Wouldn't they call them Roman sprouts then? Or... I mean, I sort of guessed by the name.
Yeah,
you know, that,
I think you're right. I think you're right.
You wonder where the name came from. Where the name came from.
Well, I bet it's Northern European.
Well, oh, definitely. I mean, I think by the Middle Ages, they were grown in Northern Europe. And I think there are some, I remember that there are references to Brussels sprouts by the Middle Ages in Northern Europe. So,
because the Italians were all about, you know, broccoli.
Well, sure. And they must
Vinny, I'm sure, you know, would have thought about using, you know, stir-frying his broccoli. Mm-hmm. Right, if he had, you know, if that had been available, but his Brussels sprouts, you know, were they just had frost? They were perfect for a little stir fry.
Barb in Gays Mills, on to you. Hi, Barb.
Hi there. I'm sorry, I have a cold, so I hope you can hear me. But I want to, before I make my comment about potatoes, I want to say whenever I hear arugula, I think of that funny movie. I can't remember who the actor was. Mouse Hunt. Where the mouse outsmarts everybody else. But that's another story.
Yeah.
Potatoes. My husband made the most magnificent wine out of potatoes.
Potato wine? Sure.
Yes, because of the starches in it, the natural sugar that fed the yeast. Oh, was it good. That's all I have to say.
Oh, thanks
now,
very much.
I don't remember the arugula. I remember, see, I always associate the arugula now, of course, with Barack Obama, who I believe...
Mm-hmm.
I think we could start a movement, if I have not already started it, in which we would actually name arugula, sorrel, right, as the vegetables for 2009. But I don't remember that in that mouse movie. I think I remember watching that with my little boy.
Arugula, yeah, arugula.
Were they eating arugula? No.
Arugula, I think.
It's apparently Barack's favorite vegetable.
Well, I tell you what, potato wine is no reason why not, and obviously some of the best vodkas are made from potatoes.
Yeah, that's
not
true. But you know, the problem here, Larry, is really all about, you know, naming it. I mean, there's something about calling it Beaujolais Nouveau or Merlot, you know. But when you say, "I will have a rosé de Bibanc," it has such a bouquet. I tell you, I just cannot contain myself. You know, there's rosé de Bibanc. You know, it just, you know, I just, it's not working for me. Irwin, what do you, am I going
oh,
on?
Oh, you're coming.
There's a certain amount of, snobbishness, I think, that's required in the name. And I agree with you. Russet Burbank just doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
Well,
how about, what are some of those other names? The Norcoda? That doesn't do it either.
No, I do not think so, Francois. I think the Norcoda, it has a bouquet, it has a je ne sais quoi. You know, it's not working. I'm sorry. It doesn't have the Merlot or the Beaujolais Nouveau. I'm sorry.
Well, I tell you what, Barb, thanks for that call. We know we can have potato wine, and if you'd like, you could send us a bottle, and we'll
or a haiku.
Or a haiku, and
yeah.
We'll
I think there's
both.
Potential there for a haiku.
Sally in Wayland, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi, Sally.
Hey, you guys. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I'm already doing orders, seed orders, getting all the catalogs.
Wow, good for you, Sally.
Yeah, just into it. Anyway, I'm sure you've seen in the magazines all these kind of goony goo-hoo vegetables. And the one that I've been looking at for the last couple of years is the one where it claims to grow tomatoes on top and potatoes on the bottom. And I didn't believe it, of course, and I did not order it. But this year I grew potatoes in a container.
Uh-huh.
I think any experiment of growing vegetables in a container is a worthy experiment, and I do several of them every year just to see if it can be done. I grew my potatoes in a 12-inch diameter pot, which is actually fairly small, and I harvested 4 pounds of potatoes from each pot, which I was really happy with. So what I had done is I put the After I harvested the potatoes, I put the plant back in to see if I could get a second growth. As I said, always an experiment. It's always an experiment. And the potato plant did grow, and it sprouted tomatoes. And I, of course, it scared me, so I didn't eat them because it was kind of freaky, and I just kind of let it die. But have you ever heard of this, and could I have eaten these things, and would it have grown more potatoes again?
Don't want to eat them because they're going to be loaded with alkaloids. They, you know, the potato will actually flower and produce, you know, they produce berries. The trouble is that those berries are just loaded with alkaloids, so I would avoid those like the plague. There is this, you know, I don't, you see these kind of oddball descriptions of the palmetto, right? Where you graft, yeah, where you graft a tomato on top of, and the good news is that you can graft the tomato onto a potato root. The bad news is that you will get neither potatoes nor tomatoes. Neither one actually works.
Okay, I just
but
thought
I do
very,
love,
it was a very,
but you know what I really, what I really liked about your call was that you know, you really discussed an aspect of vegetable gardening that I also agree with, that every year a garden is sort of an experiment, right? You'll try a new vegetable, you'll try a different way of growing it, you'll plant it early, you'll plant it late, you'll plant it with this mulch, you'll plant it without that mulch. One of the fascinating things about growing a vegetable garden is just that opportunity to, you know, it's an art form, it's a science form, it's experimentation. I mean, that's certainly the way I approach it, and I really, you know, share that vision with you.
And applaud you for your experimentation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The only grafting that I really got involved in, Irwin, you're familiar with this one, right? Whereas when, remember when the when I had that problem with disease, I forget, what is that called?
Wasn't it walnut wilt?
Yeah, walnut wilt, that's right.
So is, for the listeners out there, this is when you have a walnut tree roots near your garden. It's very difficult to grow solanaceous plants, so tomato, pepper, eggplant, because of the compounds that come off of the roots of the walnut tree.
Yeah.
But I found that it would kill my tomatoes, but it preserved my, but of all things, you know, and I felt that there was a certain punishment being expressed here, because the only vegetable that worked was, can you believe this, Irwin, the eggplant.
I know, maybe that's the only thing it's good for.
That's really, what I did was I basically cut the doggone things off, and then I grafted my tomatoes on top. And that was the only way at that time that I could produce tomatoes, was to actually graft them onto the eggplant, which is not one of Irwin and our... There are certain vegetables that we do not allow in our class, actually. Didn't we vote democratically this year and actually remove the eggplant from our list?
We substituted chocolate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right, yeah. I remember that now, yeah. Because you have to have five a day, right? Five vegetables
that's right,
a day.
That's right.
And we thought, why not make one? Yeah, okay, yeah, that works out. Yeah.
The eggplant's out.
Yeah, yeah, eggplant's out.
Terry and Abrams, on to you. Hi, Terry.
Good morning. I just thought I would call in and mention a good plant food. It works both on the foliage. You can spray it on the foliage. And, of course, what is taken in also the drips onto the soil. It's taken in by the roots. It's a liquid, and it's called Fallotwatches Grow, and it's out of Door County. I was wondering if you ever had any experience with that. My father-in-law used it for years commercially. He sprayed his squash.
With, I'm sorry, what is the name of that? You kind of pronounced that quickly, and it sounded very exotic and French.
Follets, F-O-L-L. E-T apostrophe S, I believe.
Oh, Follett.
Follett, watch us grow.
Okay. Watch us grow.
Nope, not familiar with that one.
Irwin, are you?
It's a 888.
I'm not sure I heard it properly. Follett,
watch it grow.
Watch it grow.
Watch us grow. Follett, watch us grow. It's been around since 1952.
No kidding.
It's out of Door County. It's excellent.
Never tried it.
You know, because you can spray it. You can put it in a little pump sprayer, mix it according to, you know, like 2 tablespoons to a gallon of water and go nuts.
Hey, I'm willing to give it a shot. I'll try it. That's what vegetable gardening is all about. I'm going to watch it grow.
Well, I have it online here, and it's Watch Us Grow. And it's, if gardening is your thing, remember your jug of wug, Watch Us Grow. Wug, Watch Us Grow.
Larry, does it say what the nutrient composition is in it? You know, like a 10, 20, 20 or something like that?
I think it's, Terry, it's an 888, isn't it?
888, yes. It's 888.
It's an 888, okay. Uh-huh.
My father-in-law used it for years, as I said before, commercially. He'd put it in a sprayer behind his tractor. He'd spray his cucumbers, his squash, other plants also. You know, some of his cabbage sometimes.
And okay. it's produced in Sturgeon Bay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think his little, he took it over from his grandfather, because his grandfather had passed away now for quite some years, and the grandson is carrying on the business, and I think he's really out of kind of Egg Harbor.
So we can only speculate as to what might be the initial ingredients to use to prepare your old 888 Follett Watch It Grow. I would say I have visions of sturgeon piled high, mightily high, and then slowly decomposing to an 888. Then being applied to my vegetable garden. I think there's a... I'm really surprised that since 1952, not one haiku has been generated by this compound.
Watch us grow. Jug-a-wug.
I think, Terry, it's up to you to create the haiku and generate sales for 888 Watch Us Grow.
And with that, I'm going to remind you all, we're talking with the Vicars of Vegetables today, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman from the University of Wisconsin Department of Horticulture. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad you're along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my two guests, the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman, UW professors of horticulture. Irwin's also an associate dean of the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. And we always have a lot of fun when they come by, and we're talking vegetables, of course, growing, preparing, and eating them. And Adam in Oshkosh is up next. Adam, hello.
Hi. My wife and I are vegetarians, so Thanksgiving is a curious time of the year for us. And this year, instead of getting the normal soy-based tofu turkey, we went with a different brand that actually makes a turkey or a fake meat that's based on a fungus called Fusarium venenatum. Does this ring a bell?
Oh, this must be corn, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. This is a product called Corn, Q-U-O-R-N, correct?
Yeah. They're my favorite fake meat brand, actually, because I'm trying to avoid the soy so much because it's just everywhere in your face, and I like it better too.
It's wonderful. We're also vegetarians in our family, and corn is a product that we use quite often. I know they call corn a mycoprotein, but it is myco, M-Y-C-O, is a prefix meaning fungal in origin, right?
Yes.
And so it is produced, I don't know, I think it's only in the last several decades that it's been available, but it is produced by some kind of fungal culture.
Are you familiar with this Fusarium venenatum? Have you heard of that? And is that actually like not a fungus that grows on the ground? It's some sort of other, you said, a culture. So that would lead me to think that it's not really like a, I don't know, like when I think of a fungus, I just think of a, you know, like a mushroom growing out of the ground or truffle or whatever, something like that. Is it something different?
Yeah, I mean, it's a filamentous fungus. But, you know, there are fungi, for example, that are, yeast is a good example of yeast is a fungus. It's just a unicellular fungus. So yeasts that you use in baking or yeasts that you use in fermentation to make alcohol or other fermented products are good examples of fungi too. So I think of this Fusarium as just sort of one of those types of, you know, culinary fungi that can be used to make products.
Great. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, they got to work on the name, huh? This is not.
Yeah, it's called. I don't know why it's called corn. I don't know why it's called corn.
I mean, couldn't they call it? I mean, tofu doesn't sound all that bad. Couldn't they? They got to work on the name. I mean, Linnaeus had some bad days, you know, and this was one of them. The Fusarium venenatum. I don't know.
Yeah, it's odd because it's probably one of these, you know, it's sort of an industrial fungus that's used very much like we would use a yeast. And so it's really, although it has fungal origins, it's not really a mushroom or a fungus or anything like that. I mean,
I had immediately had visions of one of those Japanese movies from the 50s, you know? Fusarium venenatum, you know, destroys and consumes Tokyo. Tokyo was defended by tofu turkeys. 40-pound tofu statuettes. In the form of turkeys, gobbling sounds were made to protect the city from Fusarium venenatum.
Thanks, Adam. Roger and Waukesha, we're on to you.
Sorry, I don't know why that vision came into my head. I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
Roger, hello.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, gentlemen.
Yeah, you as well.
Yeah, fun program. When you guys were talking about arugula, I just wanted to make a comment. There's a Steve Martin did a great bit in the movie My Cousin Vinny, where he's playing an Italian guy, and he talks about arugula being one of his favorite things to eat. And he must stretch it out about, you know, 5 seconds long, and it's just hysterical. So just wanted to throw that in.
Oh, all right. I didn't see the movie. But Steve Martin is really funny.
Oh, it's not something I'd ever lower myself to doing doing imitations of any vernacular and then playing with a vegetable. Heavens, no.
Rich in Madison, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Got a haiku for you.
Okay.
All throughout the year.
All throughout the year.
When you grow those vegetables.
When you grow.
Those vegetables.
Those vegetables.
Water, light, and love.
Water, light, and love. Oh, yeah. I could go for this. That I think that qualifies. Erwin, can we give out the Neruda Award for best haiku of the day? I think entering on that water, light, and love.
I took that from what one of you people said earlier.
Picked up on a theme that we had developed earlier.
Yes.
Roger, what a hero, yeah.
Rich.
Rich, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Rich. And now I must say it didn't meet the 575.
Larry, that finger thing is really getting irritating. Show a little.
But it was good anyway.
Show a little free-form haikuing, you know, really.
Jim likes to give a little license there, a little artistic license.
Mary in Whitewater, we're on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I'm sorry I don't have a haiku.
That's all right.
But I always enjoy listening to everybody else's. I have a comment about the sorrel and a comment about yams.
Okay.
The lady that called in earlier about the sorrel, was she growing hers outdoors or was it in a pot?
I think she was actually preserving it.
She
dug it up stock.
Yeah.
She dug it up and then put it. She was keeping it in her basement over the winter.
Well, that's what I was concerned about because I've been growing one sorrel plant for over 6 years.
Uh-huh.
It's a perennial.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you don't have to dig it up. I think if you dig it up and put it in your basement, you'll kill it. Mine's outdoors. Just it freezes, you know.
Oh, okay. Do you mulch it at all?
No, I just let nature take care of it.
Oh, okay. I think she's digging it up and putting it in her basement.
I'm not so sure that's going to work.
Oh.
Unless her basement's really cold.
No.
It'd be a nice cold basement. But I just let the mulch blow over it, you know, the leaves blow over it, and I just went and peeked at it right now, and it's frozen.
Yeah.
Fine, and next spring it'll come up gorgeously.
Aren't these amazing vegetables? You know, vegetables that you can have year-round. I mean, we think of Wisconsin as the tundra of the north.
Really,
but in fact, here we are, overwintering vegetables.
Well, I could go out
that's
in the winter and clip little green leaves off it. It would be just as fine as if I were picking it in the spring.
Well, that is good to know.
But what I do want to tell you, too, is that I believe on this program, on this very program, someone else who was a guest mentioned, you know, that sorrel does have that acid and that you have to limit how much you eat because it has digestive disturbances.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, sorrel contains oxalic acid, which is an issue because that can contribute to kidney stones and
right.
stone formation.
Right.
It's also, sorrel is also thought to be a laxative.
Oh.
And I don't know I don't know the details on that, but there is also thought to be some of that as well. So digestively speaking, this has a couple of things to be aware of.
Yeah.
But anything that can make you regular. Really, I think we have to think about as contributing to society.
Uh-huh. So I don't like the taste of it. I've tasted it raw, and I've put it in my salad, and I've put it in my soups, and I don't really feel like I need to cook it. But I keep that plant because I think it's just really nice,
mm-hmm.
and I buy things that I don't know what they're for or don't know what I'm going to ever do with them, but I figure I'll figure that out later. And I buy it, and I plant it, and see what happens.
That's a good plan.
We put in, I'll have to say, we put in, I think I put in about 20 foot of arugula this year, and I think I produced several tons, actually. it was just almost beyond belief. And it, you know, that can be pretty pungent. So I think, you know, a lot of these vegetables, you know, I wonder why they're not as popular as they used to be. Chicory.
Arugula is a brassica.
Yeah.
So it has the same pungency as many of the brassica vegetables, many of the coal crops, right?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Although, you know, it tends to, you know, there must be something about it, though, Irwin. I agree with you 100%. But there, you know, there's kind of a sharp pungency to arugula. You know, it's kind of a quick hit. It's not
it's
not a Brussels sprout kind of a glucosinolate. It's here. We got something that just bang really gives
more
you
like
a hit.
More like a mustard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
May I make my comment about the yams?
Yes.
You had mentioned earlier that yams were from Africa.
Yeah.
And sweet potatoes are grown here.
Probably from sweet potato origin, I would guess, is probably, this is a Mayan vegetable.
Okay. Well, the yam, in my little town here, in our regular grocery store in the organic aisle, I picked up yams, the real white root.
Oh,
and they're organic, and they're grown in Fullerton, California.
How about that?
And Fullerton.
The sign in the grocery store said they were yams. However, on the label, the organic label, it says, grown in the United States, sweet potato. And it's white, and it's...
Yeah. It could be there is a white-fleshed sweet potato.
Yeah, sure
can you describe the exterior of the root?
It's just real pale... pale beige.
And yam has a dark sort of almost, you know, it's almost like bark on the outside.
Okay.
I mean, a really, really dark exterior and white flesh on the inside.
All right. Well, the flesh on the inside is very pale, just like a white potato, not orange at all.
It, you know, I wonder if this is, I mean, it's very rare to see yam, true yam, which is really a tropical vegetable, tropical starchy vegetable grown places like the Philippines or Japan or Africa. So it's very rare to see it cultivated here. And,
California.
More likely, even in California, more likely it's a white flesh sweet potato.
Okay.
That would be
very
my guess,
sweet.
Too.
It tastes different than a sweet potato. And it, when you cook it, it doesn't. It tastes already like it is buttered and salted. It's just divine.
Interesting.
You don't have to do anything with it.
That's
unless you wanted to add a little cream and whip it. But it is just wonderful just as it is, and you don't need to add maple syrup. You don't need to add butter. It just tastes like it's already been buttered.
Boy, you know, that's so interesting to me. I would tend to agree with Irwin that it's very likely it's not true yam.
Okay.
I bet it's a sweet potato. And, you know, I don't think Dioscorea is very well adapted to the sort of Mediterranean climate. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, you know, a hot, tropical, humid kind of a thing.
So even California wouldn't be hot enough
for it. It would surprise me to see it in California. California, you know, a little weird, a little oddball, you know, they might do anything there.
Yeah, it's from Fullerton. I don't know where Fullerton is.
Yeah, who knows, you know?
Well, there's a, you know, yam, if you see a true yam, one of the things you'll know, these roots grow to be, you know, 2 feet long, 3 feet long. They're very large, very dark on the outside, very heavy, and incredibly starchy on the inside.
I have seen those in Mexican grocery stores.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have, they're huge.
They're huge, and they tend to be incredibly starchy, and so the fact that this had obviously some sweetness to it, which I guess would be the sugars that I'd normally associate with the ipomea, with the sweet potato, makes me wonder if it might not be that.
Okay, it's probably
I think those Californians are taking some liberties with the yam sweet potato controversy.
Uh-huh.
You know how they are.
All right.
Take advantage of
it. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Paul in Duluth, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I want to get. I don't have a haiku, but I do have a recipe for a Christmas Eve salad.
Oh, cool.
Made with jicama.
Oh, cool.
And this comes from my favorite cookbook, The Feast of Santa Fe by Huntley Dent, which I've had now for almost 20 years. It's fallen apart, and it's real easy. I'll rattle off. Ingredients: two to three cups cubed jicama.
2 to 3 cups.
Well, this
cubed
is for
jicama.
Four people. Okay.
Okay.
And you can quadruple it if you want. 4 oranges,
peeled, sectioned, and cut into chunks.
Four sections of orange cut into...
Four oranges.
Four oranges cut into small sections. Is that correct?
Yeah, and four green onions chopped.
Four green onions chopped.
A quarter of a cup of coriander or cilantro chopped.
Oh, yeah, coriander.
And to make it a true Christmas Eve salad, you want to add some cooked beets chopped up, some peanuts, and pomegranate seeds. What you do is you blend those ingredients together and put it in the fridge for a few hours because some liquid will come off of it. And then for the dressing, what you want to do is put in a bowl the juice from the salad, a tablespoon of lime juice, a tablespoon of vegetable oil, and 2 tablespoons of sour cream or plain yogurt, and some salt to taste. And whisk that all together, and then pour it over the salad, and you want to serve it at room temperature. And now, just for fun here, you can add powdered red chili to that, and in the vernacular, that is called rooster's beak because you eat it with your fingers.
You know, I have a mental image of this salad right in front of me, right here in front of Larry. Right, I have a and I just see this colorful, extremely colorful, alive, joyous kind of a salad. Irwin, I think we have to try this. What do you say, Irwin? Should we try it?
Can we put this recipe on the website, Larry?
Well, yeah, as long as you give Huntley Dent credit because it's his recipe, not mine.
Fantastic.
Is there any monetary thing that we have to deal with there?
Huntley Dent.
Because otherwise we can just forget about the Huntley Dent.
This book is like 20 years old. So I don't even know if good old Huntley's even around anymore, quite frankly. But I would say as long as you give credit. And these are traditional recipes anyway. He gives credit.
I was fascinated by the fact that you could add in. I had this mental image of the salad as you were preparing it over the radio here, and then you added beets and peanuts.
I love that combination, and then pomegranate
seeds. Yeah, I mean this. I've got to go for it. Yeah, this has got to happen.
Well, you can buy a copy of the book, the cookbook too, online. I just went online and typed in Feast of Santa Fe. And it's there for...
It's a primer of all things Southwestern. It's got not only recipes, but how to do them. From making fresh tortillas to, how to boil up a good pot of beans. It's my Bible.
Feast of Santa Fe. Wow. I'm going to have to get this. Look, this is exactly where I want to be.
Yeah, you might even find it in the library.
It's possible. Thank you. Paul?
Great. Have a nice holiday season, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. That's great. I'm going to try that out. I'm going to get a copy of the book, actually. Barb in Milwaukee will turn to you. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I have two questions. The first one is about green peppers. I've been trying to grow them for a number of years, and I just really don't have any success. They usually turn out to be about the size of a quarter and don't get any bigger than that. And I grow them in the same, I have raised beds, I grow them in the same bed as I grow my tomatoes, which always do wonderfully. I get bushels of tomatoes, so I'm wondering if you have any tips.
When do you plant them?
I usually plant them around Memorial Day.
Yeah, you might be planting them a little early?
I don't know. I think there's a, I think there's a punishment here. I mean, because you're talking about the green bell pepper, aren't you, Barb?
Yes.
Why would you want to do such a thing? I think we have to rethink this, I'll try to be serious here for a moment. I think you want to, when I consider the array of vegetables available within the capsicum, why you want to grow the green bell pepper is beyond me. So I think what you ought to do, here's what I would suggest, that you try some different types of peppers and move away from those green bells and move into, a jalapeno or something that would get...
Not quite the same taste.
Add a little spice to your life. Now, we could go back to Paul's salad. Now, think about that jicama, oranges, right? Coriander, beets. Think of putting some jalapeno slices into that. I think there's a possibility here, Barb, for us to, and you, if you get a copy of that book that Paul just recommended to us, try the new peppers. I think you might just add some zest and productivity to your garden.
Well, I have been growing jalapenos.
Oh, okay.
They grow just fine, but it's the bell peppers, the ones that you leave on the vine and they turn red, you know?
They don't like cold very much, and if you plant around Memorial Day and you get some cold, little cold temperatures in the evening, it invariably inhibits the growth or even the appearance of peppers on your plants.
I'll try to restrain myself here. I'm trying desperately, and I know that Larry wants me to actually answer this question, which I'm trying to avoid. But I would say that you really ought to consider the possibility of look at the varieties. I mean, if you insist upon the green bell pepper, I'll give you my blessing. I'll allow you to grow that. But you really want to look at the varieties because they're so. You know, there's a lot of variation out there in terms of things that will work in, for soils and temperatures and et cetera. So I would look at losing a different variety or a range of varieties.
Okay.
And do a little experimentation, and then I think that's really going to be the solution.
All right. Well, my other question is, I planted orange carrots this year, and they all came out white.
Oh, Irwin, what do you think?
So there's several possibilities there. Did the roots look similar to what an orange carrot root looked like, or were they more stringy?
No, they look similar.
My guess.
They smell like carrots also.
Yeah. What can happen? There are true white carrots that do exist in the universe, and it's extremely unlikely that you planted real white carrot seed. More than likely, where these seeds were produced, this would be the seed production field, that produced the seeds that you put in the ground, there was wild carrot present there. And that wild carrot, it produces a white root, and it's dominant to the orange. And so that pollinated the female, and then the seeds that were harvested then were going to produce a white root. And that's almost certainly the case here.
And they're safe to eat?
Absolutely. Wild carrot, of course, is a fibrous, stringy sort of fruit, and it doesn't taste very good because it's sort of fibrous, but in this case, because it's half carrot, probably half carrot, half wild carrot, shouldn't cause you a problem at all. But do you remember where you purchased your seed?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting thing because wild carrot is completely ubiquitous. It grows everywhere in the United States and, in fact, around the world. It's very difficult to eradicate.
Queen Anne's lace?
Pardon?
It's Queen Anne's lace, right?
Absolutely, Queen Anne's lace. That's correct. And so wherever Queen Anne's lace is growing and there's a carrot seed production field, you have the possibility of contamination and then producing a white root.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow, our time has flown by here.
Oh, heavens.
Yeah, we didn't get to everything. I'm sorry for that, but you guys will come back. You're going to Costa Rica in January?
Yeah, I have to go down and teach my class in tropical horticulture. So
Maybe we can do a remote from Costa Rica. We'll have to talk to Jim.
Okay, we'll talk to Packard about this.
And, Irwin, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the weekend.
You too, Larry. It's my pleasure. It's great to be part of it. Thank you for including us.
All right. And obviously, thanks to Jim Nienhuis for your haiku and for your commentary today. I appreciate it.
I wish I could have answered a question. I'm sorry about that.
He answered a few. And we've got this book to look up, The Feast of Santa Fe Cookbook by Huntley Dent, which I'm going to get a copy of.
No kidding.
I'm going to try it out because I want to get that salad recipe. I didn't get all the ingredients down. That was my problem. But I tell you what, Monday, we'll be talking personal computing. And Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison will be with us. And, of course, next week, Friday, we'll have another edition of Garden Talk. Stay with us. Lots in store.